Hey, true believers, it's that time you've been waiting for. Gather around your iPod, radio, or whatever you're listening to, for Mitch and John are about to go into the power cosmic. Sit back and listen to comic books, toys, movies, and more with those two guys that've got nothing better to do but talk about the stuff that you love. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wake the neighbors, phone the kids. It's time for the Power Cosmic Podcast. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only podcast fueled by the energy of Marvel and DC comic book fans out there. Well, fans of anything. I am your host, Mitchell A.S. Halleck. It is a somber 2016 New Year's Eve as we are wrapping the show up. We are going to have a look back at the things, and I would not be looking back alone if I did not have my compadre, my Don Quixote's, what was that guy's name? You remember?
Pompilio?
No, that's the guy that found the Fountain of Youth. Whatever. You know what?
Pancho Villa?
No, Pancho Villa was the revolutionary guy from Mexico. Pancho something. Pancho.
Don Quixote.
Yeah, Don Quixote was the guy, but what was the other one?
Tonto?
No, Tonto was with the Lone Ranger.
Robin.
Who?
Robin.
Sure. We'll go with that. Let me adjust.
He was the explorer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he discovered Florida. He was looking for the Fountain of Youth.
Yes, he was looking for the Fountain of Youth. Or maybe he found Frank Gas. We don't know.
Frank Gas.
Anyway, I didn't even introduce you, by the way.
Oh, don't do so, Mitch.
Oh, okay. If you've been listening to the show for the last 26 episodes, half a year almost, or more, you know the other half of the show is the one and only writer of Backstreet Issue Magazine. I think you've been drinking. Back Issue Magazine, Alter Ego Magazine, The Kirby Collector, The Man from the Raynham Flea Market, Booth A89 and 90, The Collector of the Unusual, The Hard to Find, The Rare, anything. John Cimino.
Hey, everybody, what's going on?
Well, John, you wanted this episode. We were all set and snug in our beds, all calm and cool and warm. But you said, no, let's do a year-end wrap-up. So this is the look back at 2016. Look back at everything, really. We're just going to be retrospective. So start it off, John. I'm going to let you start it off. What was your most memorable moment of 2016?
Oh, my God, there's a lot. But stuff I can't say in public and stuff that I can. Honestly, the most memorable time is hanging and banging with Roy, Thomas. I mean, we had some good times, I mean, I have to admit, that was fun, talking to him all the time and just getting really close with him. But we were at a convention together, that was fun. That was really fun because there was a time at that convention that I sat with the table of all, it was with Steranko, it was with Neil Adams, a bunch of Texaria. There was a lot of creators there, and Roy wanted me to go with him. And I sat there at the table, and as you know, Mitch, I can't stop talking. But there I was literally silent. I was just in awe with all these greats. And they're all just talking. It was a private little party. Even Rob Liefeld wasn't allowed in this party, but I was. Because I was with Roy, and I just sat there like, oh, my God. And they're all talking stories and having a good time, and I'm just baffled. And even Jim Steranko says to Roy, he's like, hey, this kid got a tongue? Why aren't you saying anything? And I was like, I'm just listening. I could not believe just being around these people and sitting at the table and just hearing. It was like I was in the bullpen of, like, back in 1969 or 68. It was just incredible. But that was probably the greatest moment, and one of the greatest moments of my life, I have to admit. It was just really cool, and just talking with Roy and all those guys and having a good time. It was awesome.
All right. Well, that sounds like one great moment there, true believer.
What about you, Mitch?
I was just thinking that as you were prattling on about my experiences. I always go back to the annual Comic-Con that I produce. I've been doing these things for years now, and every year they get better and better and better. Not better guests, but better experiences, better moments, because as you get more proficient and more professional and more, proficient, I guess proficient is the word. You know, you get to take a chance, and you know me too. You always say I never enjoy the moment because I'm always running around like a chicken with his head cut off, because it's not easy producing a show with tens of thousands of fans and guests and actors. You know, there's a lot of plates spinning, and I have to run around and make sure they're all spinning properly and don't come crashing to the floor. But there's always one moment where I get to enjoy the show like a fan. And this year, I'd probably say, let me see. Maybe hanging out with Dan Slott, kind of the comic book writer, writes Spider-Man. He and I were there before the show opened up, and he was just going on about Doctor Who, and he was walking around the TARDIS that we had there, and he was just like any other fanboy. I think that was kind of a fun moment, but there's so many of them looking back. I don't know.
We had a lot of good times. I mean, we got asked if we can go back to March when me, you, Kenny Lawrence, and Frank, and our gang, Reed.
Yeah,
we went to go see Steve Ditko, our yearly
pilgrimage.
Our yearly visit to Ditko. He wasn't there, but we had a good time at Carbo's show in March and just hanging out.
You know what? You know what? You just reminded me of something there when you said Carbo. Now, if folks listening to this might not know who we talk about, but it's Mike Carbo, Michael Carbonaro, I believe that's his full name. He's been producing comic conventions in New York since the 80s when he was just a kid. Early 20s, maybe, I think. And he is just a legend in the East Coast, maybe across the country when it comes to Comic-Cons. He is like, I don't know how to put him. I always describe him as Mick Jagger meets Dr. Seuss, because he is a character when you see him. He's always on. He's got energy like the exploding sun of Krypton or something. You know, don't you agree, John, that Mike just never stops?
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's great.
And he's the one that's been bringing creators and guests to the East Coast for years and years and years. He's a showman. He is a P.T. Barnum if there ever was one. But, I'm already looking forward to this March's show when you and I will head out once again. Roy will be there as well. We'll try to coax some other friends of ours. Maybe Jerry Ordway could pop up, and we'll go to New York for the day and hang out.
And I think even Plastic City Comic-Con promoter Keith Gleason will be coming up with us this time.
Keith Gleason will be there. You know what, thinking of Carbo, I do remember something, thinking about 2016. That was a show I went to in the early 2000s with my son, and Mike had, of all people, and I was thinking about her this week, Carrie Fisher, in one of her first ever Comic-Con appearances, because you got to remember, nowadays people just take it for granted. They think that all these big celebrities go to these comic cons and do autograph signings and photos and stuff. But that wasn't the case not too long ago, where if you were an actor and you were doing a comic book convention, it was not looked upon favorably. It was almost looked upon as like these conventions. I remember walking up to her and she was signing, and I point blank, I looked her right in the and I said, okay, I got to ask why you're here. Did you lose a bet? Or are you doing this for like an article or something? Are you writing an article? And she started laughing. She said, a little bit of both. I'm actually here writing an article about Vanity Fair, or for Vanity Fair, about fans and Comic-Cons and all that type of stuff. And she was just funny as hell, because I remember I had my son with me, and she asked if she was glad that I had not had my son dress up. And I thought it was a little awkward if I had him dress up like Princess Leia when he was 6 years old. But I said, no, we only dress up for Harrison Ford. And then she said I was a wise ass. And I remember she gave me a free drawing or a free photo of her in that metal bikini. And then we just talked for a little bit more. And that was it. I mean, it's the only time I ever met her. And then this week, as we all know, she passed away, unfortunately, at the young age of 60 years old, followed right after that by her mother, the legendary actress Debbie Reynolds. And, John, a lot of actors die. A lot of singers die. A lot of folks die every day. I mean, this is the way the world is. But I got to tell you, I was hit by this one. It took me a couple days to really let it sink in because Star Wars was on the TV, and it's in the new movie there, the Rogue One, that's playing in the theaters. It's always over. Star Wars is everywhere lately. And you feel sad, John, because you realize you're not going to see these people anymore, and it really hits
you. Absolutely. I mean, it wouldn't be 2017 or our 2016 wrap-up if we don't talk about the death of celebrities. But I don't know if you remember, Mitch, but even R2-D2 died this year, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot Kenny Baker passed away as well. Yeah. Well, you know what, though? He was really old, and he's been very bad health the last couple of years, so it wasn't too much of a shock to see that one. But Carrie Fisher, you know, just falling sick on a plane and dying a couple days later, that was really a surprise, you know?
But, Mitch, we talked about it. I mean, she lived a great life. Let's just say she had a lot of excesses and a lot of ups and downs in her career. So, that takes a toll on you. And a lot of these celebrities, especially, you go from Prince to... I don't know if Bowie had any really big problems, but a lot of these guys were like George Michael. I mean, they all were on heroin, they all had pill problems, or they were all recovering, or what have you. I'm just saying, like, that stuff puts a toll on you. But it is kind of unfortunate, though, too, because I have to admit, I was never a big Star Wars fan. But if I had to pick out of those big celebrities, Carrie Fisher was my favorite because she was the most down-to-earth. I loved her attitude. She just didn't care. I mean, she just was, she told it like it was. She'd be the first to tell you about her problems, and she'd laugh about them or what have you. She was always like a good person, a good soul. She never took it seriously like your buddy Harrison Ford there, who I'm not a big fan of. But, right. I mean, she was just down-to-earth and fun-loving. She could be with the poorest people or the richest people. You know, it just didn't matter. She's the type of person that'd take a piss on the lawn and be like, hey, I had to go. You know, and everybody laughing. That's how she was, and I thought that's what was great about her.
Well, she was born into that circus life, you know, like I said, with her mother being a famous movie star, and she had a photograph of herself on a magazine, she says, within the first 3 hours after she was born. She was already on... the news wires and such. So she was always exposed to that. And like you said, I mean, a lot of them get stuck in these vices and some, unfortunately, give in to the vices and they die at a young age or just wreck their lives and stuff. But it's not an easy life. I mean, you're always on. You can't go anywhere. There's people always trying to glom on you, trying to get something from you, trying to say they know you. And That whole thing of celebrity, I mean, I'm not going to say anything, but like you said, when you were with Roy Thomas, you were speechless because you were around all these legendary creators and stuff. But you got to know, it must take its toll on people. Those guys can let their hair down. You got to excuse the sound in the background. I got a new puppy for Christmas. But when they get together, I think they enjoy each other's company because they get to hang out with... like-minded professionals who understand their lifestyles and they could let their hair down.
Peers.
Yeah, they're peers. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. And it's even harder for women, and especially pretty women celebrities, because there's always an expectation of how they look, you know, and I know that's tough, but it's like, you know, and like, it's hard. We see all these, you know, models and everything, and they have to fight against the toughest opponent of all time. It's Father Time. And it's like, you know, sometimes, you know, Carrie Fisher was a very pretty girl, you know, especially during Star Wars and, you know, wearing the Princess Leia outfits and all that stuff. And so, you know, it's a hard life because the wrinkles are coming. They're an expectation. Now, I guess I know it is also true for guys, too. But you know, a lot of those celebrity girls... We're known for their looks, and it's just like you add that on to the whole world, and like you know when you see a girl or you see a guy, and you go to the. I mean, we deal with celebrities all the time, and it's kind of like, well, that they don't look too good, you know. Like they always have this obligation to look good, you know, despite how they look inside. And I think having that type of lifestyle leads to a lot of stuff. I mean, let's take George Michael, for instance. I mean, he was a great, great-looking guy. But if you see those last photos of him prior to his passing, just days before his passing, he was bloated to the... He was just so much excesses and stuff. He just looked like a different person. And it's just like, and he was in hiding too, because he didn't want a lot of people to see how he was. So I'm just saying, like, just that lifestyle, that expectation that people see, it is tough. And so it leads people to down some scary roads.
Well, yeah, I mean, can you think of any, since this is a comic book focused podcast, is there anybody that you could think of that's ever gone that way? I mean, we don't want to talk ill about any creator. Who?
No. What do you mean? Went that way?
I mean, there's been some comic book creators that have unfortunately passed away at an untimely age because of, I don't know, alcohol.
Excesses or expectations. Well, I mean, if you look at a lot of, let's just say the comic creators, I mean, you got to look back then. I mean, let's go back to the golden and silver age when we had, like, the Wally Woods, the Bill Everett's, the C.C. Beck's. I mean, a lot of those guys had drinking problems. I mean, that's and well documented. I mean, Bill Everett died in the basement of a church, and Wally Wood blew his brains out from depression. He was an alcoholic forever. A lot of those guys came from World War II and stuff. I mean, it was tough business to make money in. A lot of them had, a lot of them coming from the service, and I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things. Bill Finger had a drinking problem. I mean, he was always looked down upon, not given his credit where credit was due. It's the pressures of work. I mean, look at you, Mitch. You have a lot of pressure putting on your shows and all that stuff, and like keep making that run. So, but like your outlets are different. You know, some people.
That's
can't
true. That's true. I said before, my demon is the Twinkie, and I've put on some pounds from stress over the. I've eaten a lot of pizza. I swallow a lot of stress, John, like John Candy said in Stripes, and along with a lot of pizza, but. No, because like you said, there is a pressure on you that, you don't even believe it. Because look, I sit there every year, you try to top yourself. Every time you do something, you want to make it better than the thing before you put together, And because people are expecting it. They have a great time at the shows. Well, let's use the convention, for instance. They have a terrific time. They loved it. They talk about their friends. They can't wait for the next show, the next year. So as the guy is producing it, you sit there and you realize these expectations are out there. You can't do a subpar. You only get one shot at it. And you don't want to give anybody a bad taste in the mouth. You don't want them to walk away and go, it was okay, but the year before was better. You never want that. So, yeah, that's always constant. And I suppose whether you're a singer, a writer, an artist, whatever your last work was, you always sit there and you go, geez, I hope it's better. I hope the next one's better than the one before, And like you said, that's a lot of pressure, and that drives you crazy. That's a lot of demons.
Plus, I mean, it's a lot of money on the line. It's
We won't even get
it.
Yeah.
Especially a promoter like yourself. I mean, me being an agent, I do have to deal with this too, but it's like you deal with so many egos, but I don't have to deal with as many as you because when you're doing the show, I mean, you got... hundreds of people there, it's I'm just saying, like, you're dealing with so many egos and you have to make sure everything goes right. So many people want some stuff. Some people, like our buddy Ming, he needed his pizza, right? No, he didn't want his pizza.
Yeah. Ming wanted his masseuse and shrimp cocktail and caviar.
But I'm just saying, like, it takes a lot of pressure. It takes a certain type of person to deal with that. I've always been pretty lucky. I keep myself in pretty good shape. I was always healthy, and I love dealing with egos, and I love the whole part. I love that whole dealing with promoters and all that stuff. I actually thrive on that. Some people can do it, some people can't. But I have to admit, running a show is a lot different. Like I said, that would be a little tough for me because a lot of money on the line. This has got to go. This person's got to be here at that time. But this person's late, and you start pooping your pants, and it's like, oh my god. So it's tough. You gotta love it though, Mitch. We gotta love what you do, and like you do a good job at it. Terrific Con is one of the most, it's always talked well. Critics always, if you read all your all your reviews and all that, you get all the thumbs up and the five stars. But it's tough to make that happen.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that, and I thank you and anybody else who's ever taken the time out to say they really enjoyed it, because it does mean a lot. Because like you said, you really never know if it's working while it's happening. It's always afterwards that you could you look back in retrospect, as we were doing today on the podcast. But let's change gears. Let's get a little bit more upbeat. Let's de-Frank Caz it, as I like to say. Let's look back at 2016. What were the highlights of the movies? There was a lot of comic book movies. We had Superman and Batman beating each other up, though why we didn't know, because they were super friends when we were kids. We had Captain America and Iron Man beating each other up as well. We had Doctor Strange. What do you think? What was your favorite superhero movie of 2016?
Okay. I got to break this up. My best superhero movie or my favorite movie, I have to go with Captain America Civil War.
Why?
But my favorite moment in movies is a tie between seeing Spider-Man in Civil War and then when Wonder Woman shows up at the end of Batman vs. Superman. I mean, I cannot deny how unbelievable those last 20 minutes in Batman vs. Superman was. Just because when Wonder Woman shows up, Gal Gadot, just unbelievable, like when she blocks the shot from Doomsday, unbelievable. And then seeing Spider-Man in Civil War, and he has the John Romita eyes, the Gil Kane drawings with the John Romita, it looked like the 70s Spider-Man. And
yeah.
Seeing that, yeah. I started crying. And then his eyes moving a little bit, it was just unbelievable. So my favorite movie, I got to go with Captain America Civil War, but favorite moment is a tie between Wonder Woman's appearance and Spider-Man's appearance.
Yeah, see, when I would always see Spider-Man's eyepieces get bigger, smaller, I always thought that was just the artist's way of interpreting, you know, shock of Spider-Man or reaction, because obviously you can't see his eyes, and that's a big thing with actors and characters. You know, you need to see some reaction. But I was surprised to see the eye thing move. I never thought of it as a physical part of his costume growing up. I never looked at that as an element. But they incorporated it well in there. I mean, you just go with it. You don't even think about why is his eye opening and closing like that, you know?
Yeah, I it brought me right back to my youth of, like, yeah, those comics, and especially the 1967 Spider-Man cartoon, like, because he... It was a Spider-Man that didn't have the full webbing. That cartoon, like, his eyes would move over here and there, and it's just like I grew up into that. You know, that was like...
Actually, you know that you say that, I think you're right. The costume did mirror the... did it have the webbing down the arms in the movie?
Yeah. You can tell they took that from the Romita Gil Kane, the 1970s Spider-Man.
Yeah, the face, the mask, definitely. Yeah.
The Jerry Conway issues, like, just unbelievable. Unbelievable art. I thought that was the definitive Spider-Man. But now, Mitch, what about you? What was your favorite movie and moment?
Favorite movie 2016. I've seen them all. I've watched them all. I'm going to say it's the Captain America Civil War. And the one scene is when him and Spidey have that brief exchange, when he's like, oh, you got a heart, kid. Where are you from? And Spidey says Queens. And then Captain America says Brooklyn. That's the Marvel Universe right there. You know,
that's
the humanistic part of it, as opposed to, where are you from? Gotham City. Where are you from? Metropolis. Because you and I both know we have no points of reference for that. But we can get in the car and drive to Queens and drive through Brooklyn, and, you know, it's more realistic. So I'd say that was the best part. I don't think the Civil War was a great Captain America movie. I still like the Winter Soldier a lot better, or more. I don't know what's the proper English, but... It had its moments. I think the ending was a little weak, because I can't believe Iron Man and Cap are going to hate each other like they do. So we have to see where the story goes in the future. But they definitely painted themselves in a corner, I think, in the Marvel movies.
Yeah, we'll see with 2017, because let's fast forward to 2017, all the movies that are going to be coming out, and we're going to be starting with Logan, right? Old Man Logan.
Logan, and then we have Wonder Woman's coming out, then we have Guardians of the Galaxy 2, you have Spider-Man Homecoming, we have Thor Ragnarok, we have the Justice League, I believe, in November, we have the new Star Wars movie coming out. The last appearance of Carrie Fisher, as far as we know.
Yeah, and the Ragnarok thing is going to be interesting because, you know, I'm a big Hulk fan
and stuff.
They're going to incorporate the World War Hulk or...
Planet Hulk, yeah.
Planet Hulk thing, and I'm not 100% sure how that's going to be. That's the one that I think has got the lowest expectations. That's why they have that. I think that's going to do the lowest out of all of them.
Yeah.
But it's the one I'm looking forward to. We have obviously Homecoming, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2 looks unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it did. And let's see, what about TV? You don't watch a lot of these superhero TV shows.
See, that's the thing is, I don't watch TV. I'll catch the Netflix stuff every now and then. Isn't Iron Fist coming?
But those had to be the best TV comic book moments this year were on Netflix. With Luke Cage was great, and Daredevil season 2. That was part of this year as well, with the Punisher. Yeah. Though, I mean, there were some great moments. You don't watch Supergirl, but they did have Superman on there, and he met Supergirl. That was pretty cool.
I did see it on YouTube. I watched that. I was a little disappointed in that Superman. What hurt me more than ever was just how the cape went.
Yeah,
the
cape bugged me too.
Overall.
Yeah, well, because they got rid of the little red pants on the outside, so now it always looks like he's wearing long johns, you know?
Yeah, but the girl who plays, I'm sorry, her name is
Melissa Benoist.
Supergirl's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think she's...
Yeah, and then, okay, so we did movies, we did TV, 2016.
I couldn't tell you comics. Mitch, why don't you answer this one?
What?
This is good. What was your favorite comic you read in 2016? Because I can't tell you one that I read.
Oh, I can tell you.
What was your favorite and worst of 2016?
Actually, it's been a bunch of them. It's been the Scooby-Doo Adventures where they team up with classic heroes. And, like, they had Hawkman, the Captain Marvel family, this week they just had him meet Harley Quinn.
Space Ghost? They had
Space Ghost, yeah. See, that's what they're playing up on the nostalgia factor, but they're actually just fun comics. They're just fun to read. You sit down 15, 20 minutes, and it's a nice little escape, you know?
And we'll have to throw this in about 2016. This is the year that DC took back the market share in comics over Marvel.
Yeah, I've just picked up the last issue of Marvel's Civil War II. And it shows about 8 different ways the Marvel future is going to go in the comics. And they showed Old Man Logan and a Return to Wolverine. And they just hinted at some of the comic changes that they've done in the last couple of years of Marvel and how they could rewrite those. I don't know what's going on with Marvel right now. I think they're in a flux. They don't know what to cut from the past, what to reinvent. It's going to be interesting to see what's next with the House of Ideas, because it's... there's a lot of ideas flying around over there. But yeah, DC seemed to get back on track with the rebirth, and they reoriented all their heroes, and it seems to be very successful. When I go to comic shops, the DC books are flying off the shelves right now. So that's something I haven't seen in years.
Yeah, and I'm glad, because, you know, a lot of the, you know, this PC movement, I mean, despite everything, 2016 was probably one of the biggest years of superhero stuff ever. I mean, think of, like, all the TV shows, the movies, all the events. I mean, it's just, if you think about it, 2017 is going to have to be pretty big to top 2016. I can't think of a time that, like, just a superhero...
You know, equate it with? 1966. Not because that was the year I was born, but because 50 years ago, in that one year, we had shows like Batman started. The Spider-Man cartoon, I think, started that year. Star Trek started that year. So many other things. The Silver Surfer, the Black Panther, came about in 1966.
Starting January 12th, 1966, Batman.
Here we are 50 years, 50 years later, 5 decades later, and look at all the superhero stuff that's out there again. It's almost like a new golden age, if you will, of superhero fandom out there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we can say what we want, and I can say what I want, whether I like this or I don't like this, I like the comics, but I got to be happy that the fact that it's all out there, and it's all part of pop culture now, and it's bigger than ever. I mean, and if you think about 2016, let's look at it on a convention circuit. How many shows, conventions, were small shows, big shows, whatever, were last year? Probably more than ever in the history of conventions.
I agree with you on that. I think in the previous 20, 30 years, there maybe have been 100 shows. In this last year, it felt like there was 100 shows in 1 year, to me anyway, because every weekend we were at a different convention. I mean, I was promoting everywhere up and down the East Coast. You go to them and exhibit and sell and try to trade and get new product for your flea market stuff. It was exhausting. It really was.
And that's just on the East Coast. We're not even talking about Middle America and the West Coast. I mean, it was just, and overseas. I mean, it's just insane. And plus, you know, being with Roy Thomas, he's getting like, we're getting these invites to like Barcelona and all that. So this stuff is all overseas too. I mean, it's just, I know Europe is another one. Like, it's just unbelievable. I cannot think of another time than 2016 that had more shows. Because even if we couldn't make those shows, Mitch, we were talking about it. Oh yeah, this show's going on and this show's going on.
Well, that's a question for you. What do you think is going to happen in 2017? Do you think the bubble's going to burst? Do you think there's too much of it?
Not yet. It's stretched this year. It's going to stretch a little more in 2017. I'll give it another 2-3 more years before it seems like when you blow on a balloon and you keep blowing and it's expanding and it's expanding, but eventually it pops. Well, how I believe what will happen, I could see it because I'm on the field. I'm the guy that's in the trenches. I do these shows and I'm like, I have my store set up and I can see that from the flea market. I can see it at these small shows. The money is not really there anymore. It's down, and I do make a pretty good living at this, but I can tell you that the money is down because I talk to all these other dealers and stuff because there's too many shows, there's too much money to get into these shows and all these things to do. It's just, once again, I'll always say it like this. The clientele of comic books and conventions is a blue collar. It's a blue collar crowd, and none of these people have the money to go to all these big shows. And they're getting so expensive now, and like I said, all the incentives from autographs and everything. It's just, I could feel it. I could see it, and even talking to other dealers. So, like I said, it's going to stretch out a little more. But then, I think within the next 2-3 years, you're going to see dealers getting more discouraged. Look at me, Mitch. I used to go to all the shows. Now I've cut them down to just the big shows. I cut down more than maybe 70% of all the shows I do. I don't do anymore because it's not worth it. So that has to tell you something. And I'm in the trenches. I'm seeing all the money, where it's going and the people that are coming. I see these. So you can tell, Mitch. You can tell.
No, I know. And from a promoter standpoint, I sit back and I go, do I invest the money and get the giant celebs that's going to have the average person pay hundreds of dollars for a photo op? Or do you keep it middle of the road and make it affordable so that they can come in with their family? You don't charge a big ticket price. The kids get in free. They get to buy some toys, some comic books, hopefully get some artwork. And
Mitch,
you know,
not to toot your horn, yeah. But now that Boston has been bought out by, you know, our friend Jimmy Talbot, who runs Boston Comic Con, has sold the company to Comic Fan Expo. Fan Expo. If you think about it, You're the last, from a smaller perspective, Plastic City Comic Con, you guys are like the last remaining shows that are kind of true to the formula of what comic conventions used to be. And, you know, I think your formula is what will always work because you still understand it's on a budget, like people can still afford to get in, you have just enough celebrities and then a ton of the creators, because that's where you come from, that's how you like it, and I think that still works. Today, the perspective of conventions has changed. It's all these huge celebrities, and then all these, you know, big autograph packets and stuff, and then comes the comic books, and then all the everything in between. And that money trickles down, and not a lot of it trickles down. Plastic City, like I said, on a smaller scale, and your Terrificon is the last of the great comic cons, and I think your formula will be the formula when this blows, when this pops. Eventually, the big shows will still be around, but I think their format and stuff will kind of go back to what you're doing. It has to.
I tell you what,
walking
dealer-wise, it was maybe 10% where the dealers were selling comic books. The rest were all toys and such.
And Mitch, you talked to a lot of those dealers. I'm not going to give names and all that stuff, but their prices were all down. Y'all know, because it's costing so much to get into these places, and then, hell, you're going to pay $200 for an autograph for this guy or for that guy, and then it's like, what's left? You know, there's not many people that can afford that much stuff. How much are they bringing to these conventions? And if they're going to go to one, then you go to all the dealers, how much are they actually spending on those comics or those toys and all that stuff? It's a tough business. Something's got to give, and like I said, I think eventually when it does give, you're going to see a lot of dealers not going to as many shows and all that stuff, and then there's going to have to be a change. And shows like, I think your format will be the lasting format.
Well, I hope from your words, from your mouth to God's ears, hey, you know what? We're going to wrap it up because one of the things I got for Christmas was a brand new dog named Harley Quinn, and she's crying to go out, and we are actually at our traditional half-hour point. We don't want to dull people. It's New Year's. They got to go out on a bang. So we will be back in 2017 with all new shows and new guests, hopefully.
What do we say, John?
And that's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.